It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here in the studio as usual on yet another absolutely glorious Northeast Florida Saturday morning. It's just incredible to me that once in a while we get a cloud or some rain or something, but just over and over, sunny and beautiful. And it sure as heck doesn't make me long for my original home.
I don't miss it at all.
Nope. Anyway, as usual, welcome back to all the regulars. You're the people that have now made it possible for us to be in our ninth year of this program, which is somewhat unbelievable to me also. But it's true, and it's still as much fun as it was 9 years ago.
Absolutely.
And there's never, ever a dull moment. As I have said repeatedly, there isn't much I can think of out there that impacts more people than the topic of money. As we all need some, and most of us don't have enough, and treating it well and making it treat us well is what we're all about. So that's why we bring this to you, and we know that there are a lot of people who are afraid to ask questions for fear they're dumb questions. I assure you, there are no dumb questions when it comes to finance. And in fact, your job as the audience is to ask us easy questions so that we look good. So don't ever be reluctant to say, I know this is a dumb question, because it isn't. And I promise you, if there's something you don't know, there's a lot of people listening who also don't know it or would love to be reminded of it. So
plus, it just makes for a better radio show when you call in. And you can hear us talk all day, and
that's right.
That we're well
and we
prepared
will.
To do that, but it's a lot more fun when we're answering questions from listeners.
Yep. And as usual, we have a lot of topics today, but if you have other topics, you can pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. We put callers up immediately for the most part, unless you catch us mid-sentence, but that doesn't happen very often. So don't be afraid to give us a call. We'll be talking about the market. We'll be talking about all kinds of other things. And, you know, I come in sort of thinking, well, here's the way I expect the show to go today. And it hardly ever does.
Almost never.
Somebody will say something, a caller will come in, or we'll trip over our own word and go on to a different topic or something like that. You never know. But that's what makes it fun. I cannot imagine how boring it would be to only have recorded financial shows. There's no interaction. And I wonder, I frequently accuse people of being afraid to answer questions from the public for fear they might play stump the band. But if you ever find something that we don't know, we promise you we'll tell you we don't know. And we'll also promise that by next week we will know and we'll report on it. So fear not for any of that. All right, this week in the market, last week we said, man, things are just, they're so good, they're probably too good.
Yep, and that was definitely the case. A couple of the indexes hit 52-week highs last week, and you just kind of had a feeling going into this week that it wasn't going to be all roses. And that typically happens when the market gets into overbought territory. And in this case, the market's been in overbought territory for like 10 to 14 weeks,
yeah.
And it depending on which index you're looking at, excluding the Dow, but the other two have been really hot, and it just is not a case or not a setup for a great week. And then you had some economic data come out, and really that's, I think, an excuse to sell off, because the sell-off was going to come no matter what. So the market interpreted that data honestly, I didn't think that it interpreted it as too bad, because
not really,
because you could have seen the market go down a lot more this week than it did.
Of course, it was a tale of two different job reports, which we will get into.
I'm going to dive into that in a minute, but yeah, it was really interesting, the disparity. But that's not unusual to see the ADP and the non-farm payrolls diverge like that. Sometimes it flip-flops, and you never know which one's going to be good and which one's not as good, but they do diverge quite often. In fact, maybe even more often than not, for whatever reason.
Yeah, but this was kind of a record setter.
Was a big difference, so we'll get into that. The talking heads blamed a bunch of issues for the Fed, from the Fed minutes to the concern over a global recession to inflation to you name it. You probably heard it this week. Basically, what it boiled down to is they said a bunch of things because they don't know. The market goes both ways, and any experienced investor knows that. And when you see a streak of good days, like we've seen on the NASDAQ in particular, you just know that that bad day is coming. It's going to happen.
You want it to happen.
You really do. Yeah, exactly.
Nobody makes really money unless there's variability.
And the reason for that is that you saw bullish sentiment reach a 52-week high this week.
It's still under 50%, but it's scary that it's as high as it is.
Yeah, and that is a function of the NASDAQ in particular being so good for so long. People are finally noticing it and getting off the sidelines and saying, I need to invest. It's that greed when you see that, when you see it going up or you see it at a high level, you want to get in. The exact wrong time to get in, but that's what happens. And that's why that is a contrarian indicator.
Greed and fear. The average person will react to them. It might even sound logical. Greed you buy, fear you sell. But you'd be far better off if you did it the other way.
No doubt about it. The NASDAQ, to show you it was a bad week, but not that bad. The NASDAQ was only off 0.9%, within 1% of where it started the week. The S&P 1.2, so just above that. Yeah. And then the Dow 2%. Down. The Dow has definitely not been the place to invest this year, if you want to make any money. It's up just 1.8% year to date versus the NASDAQ close to 30. So that's it's quite a big disparity between those two indexes.
But the best number in my book for all of this is the S&P year to date.
Yeah.
That broad market is doing very well. It's not doing scary well. It's doing very well.
I mean, it's just a shade under 14.6%, and you might look at that and think, well, why is my portfolio not up 14.6? And that would be a good question, but the fact is most people don't invest just in the S&P, and if you did, you had a really bad year last year. You want to there's a whole host of things that are not up 14.6%. And just look at the Dow. I mean, there's 30 stocks that combined are up less than 2% this year. So if you own some individual stocks, if you own even bonds, have gone the wrong way this year based on interest rates still continuing to – well, I think they're up on the year, but this week was not pretty for bonds.
No.
So. And if you are up, you're up maybe a couple percent on those. So don't worry if you're not seeing the S&P type performance. It hasn't been that kind of year where everything has rallied. There are certain things that are rallying, and if you're not 100% invested in those, you're probably not going to see S&P type results.
And if you are 100% invested there, call us and we'll tell you why you're nuts.
Speaking of things that are not up as much as the S&P, the international stocks did not have a great week. Mexico, which has been one of the hottest markets this year, was up 1%. China, Israel, and India posted small gains. But outside of that, it was not pretty. European countries got hit fairly hard, most posting losses of over 2%. And then Canada and Australia both in excess of 1%. So don't be surprised if you...
They've been doing so well.
Some of them.
If you take the international indices, for instance, they've been doing so well that we knew there was something coming, and there might be more of it. Yeah, this month is generally a better month than people think it's going to be.
July is historically recently pretty good.
All right, we're going to have to take a quick break and come back, and then we'll get into this jobs report and a bunch of other things that are kind of interesting. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our lines are open, 904-222-8255. And we do have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Kenny at 904-636-7888. As everybody knows, our government is strapped for cash always. Debt is rising and so on and so forth. It's the same old story. And Americans, despite what a lot of people do, are really good about saving for their own retirements, better than you probably think. In fact, we have so much money in retirement savings accounts in this country that if the government could find a way to steal it, and believe me, they're looking for it, they could pay off the national debt and have money left over. You believe that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. And my question is, how much money on average is in a retirement account for every single adult in this country, ages 32 to 61? What is the average amount of money? And it doesn't mean everybody's got it. Some people got lots, some got none, but the average amount of money is pretty impressive. So just give me a dollar amount that the average person has, or the average of the people has in retirement savings accounts.
All right. Good question. All right, so I was talking about international stocks, and one area that actually gained this week was emerging markets. That index managed to post a very small gain this week, but it wasn't down, and compared to the All World Index, which was down more than 1%.
I missed that little stat. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. That is a good thing.
They've been getting a little discouraging lately.
A little bit, yep. Commodities went the other way, though. They posted gains of over 1% on strong performance from oil, agricultural commodities, and precious metals. Natural gas, which looked like it may have finally turned a corner after a disastrous start to the year, it lost over 8% this week, brought its annual losses back over 50%. Yeah. Ouch.
It keeps trying.
Yeah.
It keeps failing.
It did have a nice little run up there, and then this week gave a bunch of it back. And then the bond market lost ground this week, and that was due to the Fed minutes indicating there would be more rate hikes this year. That drove yields up, which was nice because I did buy a bunch of treasuries this year or this week for people, and got some really, really nice yields on those between 5.4 and 5.5%.
Ooh. So,
yeah, and that's like
that's the
8 months
safe.
To 1 year. Yeah, that's really nice. Looking strong.
It's always winners and losers when interest rates change.
Definitely. It was jobs week, as you mentioned earlier. The ADP report came out on Wednesday and got people really riled up. The headline was, I don't think I'm going to use strong enough wording for this, but it was stronger than expected.
Yeah, a little bit.
It came in at 497,000 jobs created in June versus an expected 220,000 estimate. So they were only off by 100%.
Yeah, about 120% or something like that.
Not surprisingly, the bulk of those jobs were in leisure and hospitality at 232,000, and that's really been the strength of the economy recently, and post-COVID has been that rebound in the leisure and hospitality.
See the funniest thing about that report, though?
Which part?
Large companies, 500 employees and over, lost 8,000 jobs.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not see that.
You're talking about a lot of mom and pop and twosies and threesies and tensies businesses that are doing okay. But the big guys, and then if you follow that up, the manufacturing indexes are not looking very good either. So
no, very poor.
I'm thinking that this whole Bidenomics thing, just about the time he's out on the trail patting himself on the back, is going to shoot himself in the foot.
I honestly don't know. It's hard to tell.
That was a shock to me. They lost jobs in the 500 up.
That is interesting.
Wow.
Construction was not an area that lost jobs. It picked up 97,000 new jobs, and then transportation and utilities added another 90,000. So that made up the bulk of the report right there in those three areas. The real worrisome part for the Fed and therefore for investors was that annual pay rose at a 6.4% annualized rate, and that is something the Fed is going to look at and say that's going to be inflationary. So that's a little scary.
Some of the wrong things are looking good, and some of the right things are looking bad.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, definitely the picture is improving.
Depends.
The inflation picture.
Yeah. Oh, for sure on that. Yes. And I think we're going to get a chance to see that this week in the CPI reports.
Yep.
We could actually see a number below 3% on the headline CPI for the first time in over 2 years. So that is actually if the number meets expectations or comes in below, we will see a number below 3%. And that is really almost the Fed's target, if not the target. However, the core CPI is likely to remain closer to 5%, and so they're probably going to look at that headline number and discount it a bit. If we see a higher in the higher fives on the CPI, You might see a rate hike on July 26th.
People who like to manipulate numbers invented the core versus the entire one so that they could tell you which one looks better in a Democrat administration, which one looks worse in a Republican administration. What's happened now is the food and energy that they say they take out of it before they talk about the core because they're so volatile. Those are the ones that are actually coming down. So they love including that right now.
Yeah, of course.
But on the way up, oh, no, we're looking at the core.
Yeah, of course. So with the ADP report being so strong for last month, the expectation was that the government report would mirror that strength, and that was not the case. The number actually came in weaker than expected for the first time in over a year. The reading was 209,000 versus 230,000 expected, so not that bad. But if you look at the previous 2 months, they were revised down by 110, which made the net jobs number just under 100,000 jobs. So that is not a great number. No. This report had the largest gains coming from education and health services at 73,000, which that to me seems suspicious because who is hiring teachers in the summer? At the beginning of the summer even. I don't really get that. Government also added 60,000. So again, it just seemed like I thought the ADP report made sense and the government report did not make sense.
You sure can't put them side by side and say, I believe both of them.
No.
There's something wrong.
Yeah, it just doesn't add up exactly. But again, that's not unusual for ADP and the government.
Well, there's a time like to it. ADP only deals with non-governmental type things. It's a private employer payroll, and they know immediately when something happens because of the nature of their business. They produce paychecks.
Mm-hmm.
So they can count how many people are being added to the payrolls right now, where the government sampling is 2 weeks late by the time they even come out with a number. So it's a rehashing of past information that keeps catching up but never gets up to even. So for a month or two, you can expect some noise, and then they should start kind of coming together again on a pattern, at least, that makes some sense in the economy. So we'll see next month. It'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it was overall not a great week, but honestly, could have been a lot worse.
No harm, no foul. The way
well,
I see it.
This data, the jobs report drives the market sometimes in a big way, and the fact that the market was even up on Friday after this report came out, and it ended down, but that was just a sell-off at the close.
I thought they loved the number because early in the morning
too,
it came out, and the initial hesitation then became green numbers immediately, and it just sort of wafted all day.
Yeah, I don't know what drove that sell-off at the close. Honestly,
it was a relief rally because if the government jobs number had come out like the ADP jobs number came out, that means we're not going to get just two more quarter point increases.
Well, I think if it had come out in the 400,000 range, we would have seen a almost certain rate hike on July 26th.
Absolutely.
And now with this report it doesn't make it certain at all.
No.
So we'll see what happens in a few weeks, but that CPI number this coming week is one to really watch. If it comes in lighter than expected, that will probably be good news. If it comes in stronger, look out. It could be bad news.
And, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be. It's not going to change anything. All right, we're almost on a break. We do have a call coming in, but we really don't have time to field it. So if you will hold on through the break, we'll pick it up immediately afterwards. Meanwhile, I think that's pretty much everything I've got to say about the market.
Yeah, that's fine. I have a couple of...
Want to look forward to next week and just say, who knows?
Actually, I had a couple of quick hitters about Jacksonville. You might think that the economy is in the tank, but in Jacksonville, it certainly is not. We saw construction permit numbers rise in June after last year was the first time in since 2015, at least, where construction permits actually declined in Jacksonville. And I think you're going to see that reverse this year based on the numbers that we're seeing. So so good news here. I don't think that we're going to see, if we do go into a recession, Jacksonville, I'm not going to say is excluded, but it won't be as bad as other areas of the country.
Look at how many people are moving into Florida and how many people are moving into this area. We better keep some construction going.
Yeah, no
Although, doubt. Sarah and I were driving around the other day looking at new apartment buildings, shaking our head. It's unbelievable. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a short break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I will remind everyone two things. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is, and we have we're about to hear a guess or an estimate or perhaps a good piece of research. How much money does the average American have who is between 32 and 61 years old in retirement funds? And to find out, we're going to say, good morning, Leroy.
Good morning.
Gotcha? Yeah, there you are. So what do you think?
I got a question. I looked at the jobs report, and I thought, from what I read, didn't it say that it was down in June?
It wasn't down. It was It was under expectations.
Right.
Maybe that's what they were alluding to. Sometimes when you read those articles put out by the AP or whoever it is, they characterize something in a way that it sounds like one thing, but it isn't. It definitely wasn't down, but it was way under what it should have been.
Yeah, well, 209 on one of them.
But if you subtract out the jobs lost in the previous right. months, it was actually under 100,000. So
and the right. the household survey said 273,000. And the birth-death adjustment was only 26. So those numbers are pretty consistent.
Which
so the government numbers are pretty consistent.
Yeah.
Is that something that, well, I know it takes in consideration, but is that why they would raise rates?
No. So a stronger jobs report right. would have meant almost definite rate hike. A weaker than expected jobs report is actually good news if you're looking for the Fed to not hike right. rates anymore.
That's why the ADP okay. report was greeted with that fear on Thursday, because, my God, if yeah. the government matches that on Friday, we're getting rate hikes for a while yet. But fortunately, it didn't, so that tempered the impact.
Of the two, the government report is the one that's put more weight onto
right.
than the ADP.
But it seems like the way they put it out, they just talk on both sides of it. So no matter how people view it, they're going to be viewed as right.
Well, yes, and for instance, they love the headline unemployment rate number. It dropped from 3.7 to 3.6. So, of course, that's a big deal because Joe Biden's in there. They want him to look good. So that's a good thing. But what they didn't talk about was that the participation rate didn't change.
Nope.
The number of unemployed people is still 5 million or so. But here's the big one. About 450,000 people got cut from full-time to part-time, not because they asked to, because of work being unavailable. And the average work week shrunk a half an hour, which you will not hear also from these people. So for every stat out there that somebody can make positive, I'll give them one that's equally negative.
It's kind of been the wow. story of post-COVID America.
Yeah, it really
honestly.
Has.
It's for yeah. every positive, there seems to be a negative.
Yeah, we're truly, we're not at the spot we would be. You know, Biden's taking credit for the most jobs ever created by a president in this amount of the term. Well, if we had not had the COVID jobs in there, the first 9 million of them, and had jobs just risen at the pace that they usually do, we are just a little bit under where we would normally be in the absence of COVID. So really nothing positive has taken place out of this administration at all. But
jeez.
Should that surprise us? No.
No, no, not really. It's just it's just aggravating the way they look at the numbers and then skew them
yep.
whichever way. And usually they come out a month later and then they jack the numbers up.
Yep. Yep. Figures lie and liars figure.
So when these numbers come out, the economists are going to interpret them one way, the politicians another way, yep. but investors are going to interpret them a whole different way. And that's really the only one we should care about
right.
on this show. Obviously, we care about the other two, but really what's important is how investors are looking at it. So right now, any positive news for workers is bad news for investors. And that's so seeing a less than expected jobs report on Friday is actually good news for us. I know it seems weird, but that's
well. For years we've been saying that there are times when good news is good news, and times when good news is bad news. There are times when bad news is bad news, and times when bad news is good news. And then there are other times when all news is bad news. You just never know what you're in until you start listening to the idiots out there. But right now, okay. I would say the economy is not in grave danger of falling off a cliff.
No, it's really not. But it is trending in some areas. It is trending in the wrong direction. In other areas, it's doing pretty well. If you look at the services sector, it's pretty much on, I don't want to say it's on fire, but it is really strong.
And I think the biggest thing that happened is what happens in year three frequently of an administration. The House got taken over, barely, but it's still majority, by Republicans who have not allowed things like tax increases that the administration would have shoved through this year for sure if they had kept it. And investors know that, and therefore there's a little reason for optimism. Or as we like to say, the public and the investors love divided government.
Yep, that's true.
And we've got it. So it's a good thing.
Okay.
You want to take a shot at the trivia?
Yeah, I'll take. I saw a number of different numbers. I was looking at 95,776.
Okay, that probably is a number that has some significance, but it's not the number I'm looking for. It's too low,
I looked at another one that's significantly higher than that as well.
Okay, and
I won't give anybody a hint, so I'll just let that go.
Okay, I'm even going to go with you. Yes, it's pretty significantly higher than that one.
Oh, yeah.
That give people a little bit of an idea of what the bracket should be. So, anyway.
Well, sometimes you pick a number and sometimes it's wrong.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're on a pretty good streak, though.
Yeah, you have won a few times recently.
Yep. All right, well, take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, you all have a good day.
Thank you.
All right, so I'll go so far as to round it up. It's over 100,000. That was not much of a concession on 95.7, was it?
Okay.
All right, we've got a few minutes. If you remember, on and off over the past few months, we had a request for basically book reports. And do you have suggestions of books to read? And I got one today that's just a little bit unusual. And there's good reason why I'm bringing it up. But meanwhile, I'm going to retrace steps a little bit. If you remember when Jennifer Aiken, the attorney, was here, she suggested a book called Successfully Navigating Your Parents' Senior Years by Star Bradbury. I'm about halfway through that one, and I agree with her. It's really very well done. It explains a lot of different things like living arrangements and the types of older people's homes and living at home versus going somewhere, the various ways you buy into places and so on. And if you're faced with that, either because you're getting older or because you have parents or whatever who are getting into it, it's a pretty good read. It's a little wordy, I think. It travels over some things kind of more than once. But that's okay because the chapter divisions are going to tell people, I don't need this chapter, but I want to go read that one. So that's something to sink your teeth into if you're in that situation. There's another couple, if you've ever heard of the Lightbulb Press, they're kind of a specialty they don't do big volume books. They're not handbooks either. They just do short, concise, very educational books. I read a couple of them when I was just married, so they go back a long, long ways. But there's a couple I looked at. One of them's called Your New Job, and that tells the story of people like Adam when he went to work, who you get it all set up, and you go get a job, and you get your first paycheck, and there's nothing left of it.
Yeah, that's like,
in the heck?
To date, or at that time, that was probably the worst day of my life.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm making all this money. I never dreamed I'd be making this much money. Where is it?
Yeah, exactly.
But that one, that's not the only thing covered in the book, but it's one of the sort of premier topics in that book. Another one is called The Guide to Personal Finance by Lightbulb Press. I got interested in this stuff many, many years ago. We've been married 50 years, and this was in the first few months, I think, when Sarah came up with a book that she kept from college, I believe, and it was called basically Personal Finance. It was a textbook from a course she took, and she handed it to me and said, "You'll like this. Read it." I did, and look where I am today. It really did stimulate a lifelong learning experience with things financial. But this week, and I'll tell you why this is unusual, I'm only a quarter of a way into this book, and I'm already recommending it. Those of you who watch Fox News a lot know who Jason Chaffetz is. He's a former Utah congressman. He was chairman of the Oversight Committee. He got his mitts into all the good stuff that was going on. I think he's been out maybe 5 years, something like that. But he's become a Fox News contributor, and he fills in for some of the weekend hosts, things like that. He's a very smart man, and he's really knowledgeable about things finance. You know, this book is called The Puppeteers, The People Who Control the People Who Control America. It's brand new, and I started reading it, and I'm absolutely mesmerized by it, and I recommend it very highly. But one of the things that he's into, what made me do this today was the chapter I've been reading yesterday and this morning is about ESG funds. And it's how the left has taken over places like BlackRock and the other big money managers, forcing them into the ESG, the environmental, social, and governance things, at the expense of doing their fiduciary duty to make their investors the most money possible. And that now it's in how are they fighting back on that. I recommend it very highly. Read it. We'll be right back after one more break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Sorry, I was just giggling at myself. All right, we're going to go directly to the lines again before we break any promises. So, good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
What's happening?
Steve, I'm a voracious book reader. That book that you just mentioned sounds very interesting, The Puppeteers.
Yes.
Who was that by? Who's the author of that again?
Jason Chaffetz, former congressman.
Oh, of course, the Utah congressman.
You got it.
Okay, thank you. I just finished one that was very interesting by Gretchen Morgenstein, who wrote some articles for the to-do we had in 2008. She wrote a book called The Plunderers, and it was about the people that got involved in private equity and the shenanigans that goes on with private equity. That was very interesting.
All right, we'll look it up. I'm always on the hunt for things like that.
Yeah, The Plunderers by Gretchen Morgenstein.
Okay, I have heard of her.
Yes. In any case, a quick question and comment, if I could.
Sure.
You were talking about unemployment figures, and Adam said very succinctly about how there's all different figures thrown at the same time for unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday at about 10:15 a.m., I'm looking at Ameritrade, and it comes in that the market's down at that moment about 370 points.
Yep, it was an ugly day.
And the reason given was that an employment figure came in that was pretty high. I think it was 495,000.
497, right. Yep.
Okay. And yet the figures that came out yesterday were, I think, 209,000. So there's all these different figures that could confuse somebody. But my question is, it seems that Powell, I remember Elizabeth Warren, though, was going after Powell during a hearing about how do you feel about all this unemployment to achieve your figure of 2% inflation. And I was always curious, if I was the leader of a capitalistic country, I would love to come to the microphone and say, ladies and gentlemen, I want to report that we have full employment for everybody aged 20 to 70. And yet having employment seems to be a bad thing when you fight inflation. I just would like to get your comments.
Yeah, it's a great question. We talk about this a lot. And it really seems like every time you think about Powell trying to achieve his goal of making more people unemployed, the next question, if you have a heart, is why does it have to be that way? And I tend to agree with that. Why does it have to be that way? But I do see that it is a real problem, because when people have money or have a job, they spend money, and that's part of what causes inflation is demand. So if there was a better way, I am sure that Powell and other Fed chairs, despite being politicians to some degree, would try to achieve it that way, but I don't think they know of any other way.
Would you like to take a ride in the Wayback Machine?
Yes.
Let's go way back to January 19th, 2021. Who was president?
January 19th, 2021. Wouldn't that have been Mr. Biden?
That was the 20th. I'm talking about the 19th.
Okay. My old New York friend, Donald Trump.
What was the inflation rate?
Oh, I don't recall.
1.3.
Excellent.
It was the fullest employment we've had in my lifetime among every category of people, the undereducated, the minorities, the PhDs, everything. It was the Goldilocks economy of my lifetime. What's the difference between that and now? The government is spending too much money, and Powell doesn't have a damn thing to say about it.
Well, he can't control that. Yeah, he's got to react
problem.
To it. Yeah,
he is charged with fixing it, but he doesn't have the power of the purse.
And it's not just what they're spending today. It's what they spent over since COVID as well. And when Biden got in, he passed. There were two bills that came out that were, the second one especially, was arguably completely unnecessary.
And it almost got worse.
Yeah, it really did. If Manchin and a handful of other people hadn't stepped in, it would have been way worse.
Yep. And now, if Manchin hadn't given in on the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, we would not be in the condition we're in right now.
We still
would have been higher than under Trump.
That was a drop in the bucket compared to the previous bill. Yeah, so it's just all this. When you print money like that, what's going to happen?
But we had it. We absolutely had it on on January 19th of 01. And on the 20th, we started losing it. And we were losing it before the end of the day because he canceled all kinds of things on the very, very first day.
Mm-hmm.
And it went straight downhill from there.
Yeah. If I'm correct, inflation is too much money chasing too few goods.
Correct.
That's the most user-friendly definition I know of.
Rather than encourage unemployment, which I just can't wrap my head around, wouldn't it be better to increase the supply chain and just have more products available?
Well, companies won't do that, though, because if they're not selling, they're going to stop producing because it affects their bottom line. So that's actually much harder to control than unemployment when you're looking at a limited set of tools that the Fed has.
Yeah, but you say they're not selling. Aren't they selling because employment wages are higher and people are buying?
But they're not. The real wages have gone down.
Yeah, that's true. I saw that the other day. True.
If they measured everything from GDP on up in real dollars, the whole economy would look like what it is now, which is much weaker than it was under Trump.
And if you flood the market with too many goods, even when people are buying a lot, it causes deflation, which is even worse for the economy than inflation.
It all starts with regaining energy independence. The rest of it will follow nicely. You could even throw in another round of tax cuts, and we could get back to where we were real easily. But, of course, that stuff
My observation is that fine-tuning the economy in a capitalistic country is such a hard thing to do.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone envies the job that Powell has right now. I certainly would not.
I find myself actually defending him once in a while, and it's very uncomfortable to do so. But if you're rational and see what's really going on, you understand he is not in control of this.
Thank you. Thank you for putting that in perspective. Appreciate it.
I appreciate the call. Do you want to take a shot at the trivia question?
I'm going to go with 206,000.
All right. That's a little high. We got a bracket.
All right. Gentlemen, have a great weekend, and thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Mike. We appreciate the call. And this sounds like Marshall.
I love the line, figures don't lie, but liars do figure. thank you for bringing that up. I've been thinking about these inflation indexes, the CPI, the CPE, the core, all these different things, and it hit me all of a sudden, if we took a baseline of values for each of those at some point in a pretty stable economy years ago, and we looked at where they went up or down from that point, we would have a plot of the directions of each of them, which then would be consistent because they're measuring the same things, and now we're looking at these relative measurements.
Yeah, we won't even measure the CPI the same way we used to. It's very hard to plot anything where they keep changing the definition.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And how about this CPE?
Yeah, the Fed favorite?
You know, just change the rules.
Yeah.
Let me take a wild shot at your number. How about 175,000?
Just a little too high.
Okay.
We appreciate it.
Take care.
Yeah, Marshall, you're exactly right about the measurements, and they've done it for decades, back as far long ago as Nixon. They started changing the rules. Clinton changed a bunch of them. They didn't like what they were reporting, so they changed the measurement. They went from U6 to U3. That's probably the biggest one. U6 is a good measure of unemployment. U3 stinks.
U3 is terrible. It really is.
Yeah, that easy. So you're right on. Okay, you dropped off. If you're still listening, Marshall, you definitely nailed something there.
But that's the way politicians measure.
Exactly.
And as I just said, there's three ways: the way economists do it, the way politicians do it, which can be they can affect the way economists do it because they have they set the rules in Washington. They tell you what gets released. But
that's why we try to separate politics from finance. But you can't do it 100% because the politicians create the finance.
The collective wisdom of the market is going to know that it's changed, and they're going to look at a consistent. When I read through our researchers and all the data that I get to prepare for the show, they're looking at historical averages, just like what you said, Marshall, and they know what the historical average is of inflation per every report, and they're comparing where it is today and where it's headed compared to other situations that were like this, which I think there really hasn't been any like this, but because of COVID. But they're looking at, okay, if it historically it's taken this long to come up, and when it does, it takes this long to come down, and they're saying that, I mean, it's not that they're people out there are looking at the historical averages, right, just like what you asked.
All right, between the ages of 32 and 61, for every man and woman in this country, there is $150,000 in a retirement account. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't have one, and a lot of people have a lot. But it's in the upper 30s of trillions of dollars, and Uncle Sam knows it's there, and they keep trying to pick away at it and get some more of it, including like a one-time wealth tax and things like that. You got to be vigilant and not let that happen, folks. It's very important. And for those of you who have left government jobs and still have a TSP plan, why don't you call us sometime and we'll give you some thoughts on it, okay? Thanks for listening. It was a fun show today. We'll see you next week at the same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
AM 600 WBOP Jacksonville 101.1 FM.